Today is Wednesday, December 17th, 2014. My name is Mari Allen, and I'm here at the Mill Valley Public Library in the History Room interviewing Kiddo, the Mill Valley Schools Community Foundation co-founders Penny Weiss and Tricia Garlock, who are here today to talk about their contributions to the education of thousands and thousands of students in the Mill Valley School District. Penny, I'll start with you. If you can tell me first your name, where you were born, and how long you've lived in Mill Valley.
My name is Penny Weiss, and I was born February 2nd, 1948, in Los Angeles. I've lived in Mill Valley since 1970 in the same house. It was our first house after we got married, and we're living there still.
And the name of your husband?
Robert Weiss.
And do you have any children?
Mm-hmm. We have two grown sons, Josh Weiss and Gabe Weiss. They're both married, and they both have children, and they live in the East Bay.
Okay. And did they go to the Mill Valley Public
yes,
Schools?
Yes, they did.
Okay. Thank you. And Tricia?
Tricia Garlock. And what was the question again?
Tell me when and where you were born and how long you've lived in Mill Valley.
Okay. Born January 6th, 1948, moved to Mill Valley in Bakersfield, California. Moved to Mill Valley in 1973 to the same house. Lived there ever since, still do, next door neighbor to Penny Weiss.
And what street do you live on?
Florence Avenue.
Okay.
And just up the hill from the library.
So Penny was here before
yes.
you arrived.
Yeah. And my husband's name is Jim. We have two children, both grown, both went through Mill Valley Schools, Old Mill School, Mill Valley Middle, and Tam High.
Okay. And Tricia, prior to your involvement in starting Kiddo, what was it that you did? What was your occupation?
I was the executive director of a nonprofit arts organization, the World Print Council in San Francisco.
And Penny, what about you? What did you do before this incredible idea began?
I was very, very involved in the schools as a volunteer. And before that, I volunteered in the co-op nursery school. But as soon as my oldest son started at Old Mill, I started getting more and more active in the volunteering PTA activities. And when Tricia and I met, I might have been president of the PTA
you
at
were.
The time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about the beginnings of Kiddo. What prompted you both to get really involved in changing the way education is in Mill Valley and your impact also on the state of California in creating the foundation that you did?
One of the things that we probably should note, in case somebody doesn't make the connection right away, when Tricia and I first came together, we were just close friends. And so there was a lot of time when we would just be sitting together and chatting and having tea and talking about what it was we were doing in our lives. And Tricia brought to this idea a huge amount of experience in nonprofit management. I had zero experience with that. But I brought to the table a lot of knowledge about the Mill Valley Schools because of what my position was. So the two of us together kind of made one whole to go forward with that, with the project.
And what was the impetus? Why create a schools foundation?
Well, Penny, one day over coffee, Penny started talking. At the time, our son was two.
And Penny, how old was your son at that time?
That would have been in 1980, so Josh would have been
81.
About nine.
Yeah. Anyway, Penny started talking about the fact that as PTA president, the principal had come to her to let her know that the district was going to be cutting the art and music program, and that the only way to save it was to ask the PTA to pick up the funding for it.
And what was the cause of the budget cuts?
Proposition 13. And so Penny, at the time, PTAs, unlike PTAs of today, PTAs, the main fundraiser was a bake sale. at Old Mill Park at the Mill Valley Fall Arts Festival. And Penny said, how can we fund teachers' salaries from a bake sale?
There was, and the more we talked about it, the more outraged we became about it. Both of us had a real passion about the arts. Obviously, it was Tricia's professional life. But I've always had a passion about art and music, and we just got madder and madder as we were sitting there contemplating the injustice of it. And then we also started talking about, at that time, probably still the case, the five PTAs in Mill Valley were not able to raise equitable amounts of money. Mm-hmm. So maybe Old Mill was going to be able to do something, and maybe Park was going to be able to do something, but Tam Valley was probably not going to be able to do the same thing. And the more we talked about that, the more outraged we got at the inequitability of these things not being funded at a district level. So that's probably, it was really founded out of a passion for the arts and an outrage that they were going to be taken away. And the madder we got, the more we said, I don't think I even want to live in a place that doesn't value arts for children. How are you going to raise children without art? That's just not right.
Education without the arts isn't a comprehensive education. So then we started talking about, you know, with a two-year-old, I knew nothing about the schools, but I knew that by the time our son would be in kindergarten, I wanted to be sure there were programs in place. So with my knowledge of fundraising, nonprofits, and such, and Penny's knowledge of the schools, we thought, well, if we put our heads together, we could figure out some way to make a difference. And so we started thinking about the idea that, you know, Mill Valley was a small enough community, should be one organization, shouldn't be the responsibility of individual PTA units and their bake sales and whatever to fund these programs. And we also felt it was a community responsibility. It was a community responsibility above and beyond just the parents, because for a community to survive, you have to have good schools, and for a community to thrive. And hence the first name, which was Mill Valley Schools Community Foundation. And that was very intentional that we put the word community in there.
We were certain, we had the certainty of naivete for sure, but and we were certain that we could make up the difference in the inequity of what each of the schools was going to be able to contribute through the participation of businesses and community members. Mm-hmm. So when we were looking at, well, where is it going to get better for everyone, as opposed to you go to the schools that are raising a lot of money and say, well, now actually you're going to get less money than you got before, so everybody else could have an equitable share. We knew from the beginning that wasn't going to fly and that people wouldn't participate in it. So when people ask us now, well, how did you know that was going to work? Well, we didn't actually know. We just said, well, we will just make it happen. That's all. There was a lot of naivete involved.
And
a lot.
How did you get the buy-in of the people at the other schools or the superintendent?
Well, part of what we did, there was a lot of skepticism in the beginning. And so we got together and we decided when we needed to put together a board. We found out about starting a nonprofit, getting our 501c3.
Tricia's husband Jim, who's a lawyer, was really helpful in making all of that, the legal part that we had to do.
And were these conversations still happening in one of your kitchens?
Oh yeah. So we decided, you know, we needed to have this to build this community, and we needed to gain the trust of the individual school communities, because, as I said, there was a lot of skepticism. And so what we did is we looked for, and Penny had these connections at being the PTA president at Old Mill, to find the most respected people in each of the schools to join the board and be part of that, so that they would then be able to kind of transfer that trust that they had to the rest of their school community. Another thing that was happening at the time, which really kind of helped bring the foundation and the cohesiveness together, was it because everybody was very focused on their own school, and that was all they cared about, just their own school. The year or two before, two schools had closed.
And so when was that? Do you know?
That was Homestead and Marin Terrace.
And I think that was 1980.
Yeah.
So Prop 13 was in 1979.
And for the first couple of years, schools were fine because there was a surplus. Mm-hmm. But as soon as that surplus was gone, then schools, the funding for schools started to be cut. And that is when the first thing always people look on the chopping block for some reason that I, beyond me, is the arts.
Arts education.
So anyway, we brought together the leaders from all the schools to be on the board.
We went to PTA meetings, and when you ask how we got everyone to buy in, it was very difficult, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of skepticism. And as now, when you say Schools Foundation, people know what that means. When Tricia and I started, it was an unknown entity. There mm-hmm. was a Schools Foundation in Kentfield. There was Marcus Foster in Oakland. There was the Ed Fund in San Francisco. Yeah. And I think that was about it. Mm-hmm. So when you would go in and say, well, we're going to start a Schools Foundation and this is how we're going to do with it.
It wasn't part
of what someone would say, oh, I understand, now we're going to do this. So there was a lot of explanation. Yeah. And we kept saying to people, we're creating this right now. So it can be whatever we decide it's going to be. People would say to us over and over, what does that mean and how's it going to work? And we would say, it means what we decide it's going to mean. And it works the way we decide because we're making it up right now. So there was the buy-in from the PTAs. That was one issue. The school board was cautiously supportive. We went to them first and... well, go back to the PTAs and see how the PTAs are going to respond to this before we say anything. And they didn't say, no, you can't do it. So it was a little bit cyclical on who was going to get in the boat first and say, oh, we think this is a great idea. We went to the Administrative Council to talk
Can
to all...
Can you tell me who is on the Administrative Council?
The Administrative Council was all of the principals and the superintendent. Mm-hmm.
It was a fun
and
meeting.
You just cannot, this is where the naivete came in. Tricia and I were so enamored of this wonderful idea that mm-hmm. we had that everybody was going to just go, this is like the best thing ever. We thought everyone would be so excited. And then we got to Administrative Council, and we were really shocked at how much opposition there was from the principals. And not the least of it was, I'm not sure we like the idea of a citizens group raising money and then deciding how programs are going to be administered. And we said, well, actually, that wouldn't happen. We're talking about raising the money, and the school district can still run the programs. At the time, that's what we were talking mm-hmm. about. No, we don't think so. And we could actually feel that. I remember it. We could mm-hmm. feel that meeting going south. And if the administrators had said no, that mm-hmm. was going to be the end of it. And so I can remember sitting at the table and saying, okay, you know what your schools need. Mm-hmm. Let's put everything on the table that's getting privately taken care of, that the school district is not paying for. And they were very different from one school to another, which was part of the concern that the school district had. The school board, they were surprised when they started looking at the inequities that were happening at each of the schools. They weren't aware that, I don't remember it exactly, but Tam Valley might have had a project related to, I'm making this up because mm-hmm. I don't remember, the Marsh, and Old Mill might have had one related to something else. So all of the children were not getting exposed to the same programs. So we just said, let's put everything on. Arts was not the identified program area when we first went to the...
What was?
Nothing was. Oh. We went in and we said...
We went with an open mind.
We went with... We knew what we wanted. Yeah. We wanted it to be the arts. But it wouldn't have mattered what mm-hmm. we wanted if nobody else wanted mm-hmm. that. So we said, let's just put everything on the table that all of you have a concern at your individual schools about continuing the programming. And anybody who has an objection to anything that's on the table, throw it off, and that won't be the program that we can fundraise around. We also made pretty clear to them that if custodial services was the thing you wanted mm-hmm. us to do fundraising around, we couldn't do that. It had to be something attractive.
And something that benefited the children directly. Mm-hmm. Had to be
so they might have inside. They might have all agreed on custodial services, but that wasn't the thing that we were going to be able to do. So everything got thrown on the table, and one by one somebody objected to something and they all got taken off the table. And what was still sitting on the table when we got done with that conversation was art.
And music.
Art and music. And we said, okay, if we can all agree on art and music, then let's try and coalesce around that. Can everybody agree that we can try and do that? And so then we were able to go forward. But we were taken aback by the level of opposition.
It really took us, we started.
Almost about 5 years.
Yeah, well, we started talking about the idea in the fall of 1981. And we received our nonprofit status in August of 1982, and our first fundraising year was. So it took us almost a year to build the support of the people for us to even go ahead. And our first fundraising year, we had our first fundraiser in the fall of 1982.
And that was?
A casino night at Strawberry Park and Rec.
Over. And that actually came out of the Buck Fund had recently happened, and I'm sure every nonprofit in the universe was thinking that was the font from which all money was flowing. So Trish and I said, well, let's go. They'll give us money because this is such a good idea. And we went and talked to them, and they said, okay, we might think about giving you a one-time $20,000 grant after you show us that your community really wants this. So you have to go back to the community and raise a match. So we were hoping it was going to go in the other direction, that we would have a
that
match.
That would be your seed money.
But it didn't happen. It didn't happen. So when we thought about the casino night and we thought about how much money are we going to raise, again, it was naivete. I know casino nights became very popular later, but at that time they were not. And we sat down and said, how much money can we raise? Okay, we'll raise $10,000 from entrance tickets, we'll raise $10,000 from a raffle, and we'll raise $10,000 from the gambling. And then we'll have a match and then some, and then we can go back to bucking. But it was based on nothing. We made it up.
The other thing again, okay, here we are, brand new organization. Nobody knows who we are. Nobody even really understands the concept of schools foundations working mm-hmm. together. We're going out, we're asking for contributions of prizes, in-kind donations and such. And so it was kind of like, well, how do we build credibility? Mm-hmm. How do we go about that? So we started looking around for the most respected, you know, other kind of nonprofit mm-hmm. idea in the community that we could partner with. And we went to Mill Valley Rotary. Mm-hmm. And the Rotarian said, yes. And this was said, yes, we think this is a good idea, and we will co-sponsor this event with you.
So you made a presentation at a Rotary luncheon, uh-huh. or what?
And they mm-hmm. then, their members donated prizes.
Earl Johnson, remember?
Oh, the first set of braces that he donated to
that was
our
like
auction.
Gigantic, because huge. Everybody was going to Earl Johnson for braces, and he donated a set of braces. Well, that was so gigantic. I mean, that was really enormous. So that was a big help for us.
But they really helped us gain that credibility in the business mm-hmm. community mm-hmm. that we didn't have on our own. So with the partnership, they all served as bartenders, and they helped us get the donations.
Dealers at the table.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
Yeah.
It was a Halloween, theme. At the Strawberry Rec Center. And I don't think, you know, we had sold tickets in advance, but there were ticket sales at the door. And
do you recall how much a ticket was at that time?
Oh, Lordy.
Probably $25. $5, $10. I have no idea.
And we knew we had advance tickets, but mm-hmm. tickets were also available at the door. And all of a sudden, there were just legions of people lining up to come in.
So how did you advertise it?
We advertised it through the newsletters, I think.
The PTA newsletters, and then the Mill Valley Herald, who was also...
Oh, they were wonderful. Very,
no, Mill Valley Record then.
And the Mill Valley, right, it was the Record.
Mm-hmm. And so your casino night, how much did you raise at that casino night?
We raised $30,000.
You did?
$28,000, I think, yeah.
$27,000.
We were so excited. I can't even begin to tell you how excited we were. We were just jumping up and down with joy.
And what did the Buck Fund do? Did they do
they
that?
Gave ended us, up giving?
They gave us a grant for $20,000, and they said one time, don't come back.
Yeah.
And so what... What did your seed money do for you? What did you do with that money?
We, in the early years, what we did, because the mechanism for hiring people that weren't district employees was through the PTA. Oh. So we then divided the funds on a, I don't remember whether, we've gone back and forth between per student, per classroom. I think it was probably a per student basis. That we distributed back to the PTA specifically for art and music. And the art and music teachers, they were able to keep them. And so we've had an art and music program that we have nurtured, developed, and grown over the years to the point that we have one of the best arts programs in the county, in the state, and, you know, not sure about New Jersey that funds schools properly. You know, they probably have some pretty awesome programs, but ours, I think, would really stand up very nicely to almost any arts program around.
When did things change in the school district? You said that PTAs initially were given the money to then fund teachers. When did it then go back to the school district making those decisions?
It's always been a partnership and a cooperation, and everybody has to work together. And so there's always been kind of an understanding of what's important. There's kind of a universal feeling that art and music are important. Over the years, we've added other programs based on need through the district. But Mill Valley Schools Community Foundation, then, now Kiddo, is its own organization. And really, in cooperation with the district, makes the decisions of where funding, you know, where funding goes.
We were very, very aware from the very beginning, and I think it's been the case all the way through, that... the whole, which is the foundation, exists because everybody owns it. And if it was perceived as something that was an overlay instead of something that everybody had an ownership in, that it probably A, wouldn't exist, and B, wouldn't succeed. So we were very conscious of it. It was part of the origination when we talked earlier about how we formed the board. We were very, very conscious about the constituencies that really needed to be represented and listened to in each step as we went along. And even with that, I think it was Gladys Thatcher at the Ed Fund, when we went to see her. She said to us, expect this to be hard for 5 years. And at the end of 5 years... you'll either be solid or you'll be out of business. So just expect that it will be difficult. And I think we didn't have any clue what 5 years meant. We just said, oh, well, great, thank you. But it was.
We were young then.
You know, it's really a hard thing for people to change, even when you can put in front of them, it can be better. Mm-hmm. It can be better. You don't need to accept this the way this is. But even with that, there's, you know, can be skepticism and concern.
There's also the point that when we talked about the naysayers in the beginning, there were a number, and we thought long and hard about this, there were a number of people who said, you are enabling the state by coming in and filling in these programs that are important. The state should be funding schools, and if we fundraise on our own, we're letting them off the hook. Mm-hmm. And we discussed this over and over again, ad nauseum, around and around, and came to the conclusion that it wasn't worth a generation of kids' education to make a point that might never be heard. And the reality is, it has now been several generations of children's education. The state is still not funding schools properly. And if we had not done what we did, if there are over 600 schools foundations across California, if they were not doing what they were doing, the state wouldn't be doing anything more, and who would be suffering are the kids.
But at the time, we didn't think we were creating an institution. No. We thought we were creating a stopgap. We thought the state would realize the mistake and pick up the funding.
We were a finger in the dike.
That's what we thought we were doing.
And mm-hmm. we actually talked about being out of business in 5 years mm-hmm. because the state would surely come back and fund schools properly.
Well, who was on your initial board? How many people? And
oh, Tricia, you're so prepared.
So Tricia's looking through her 13. Scrapbook. So there were originally 13.
Including Penny and I.
And were most of the people PTA presidents as well? Or
no,
who were
not necessarily. But we had, what we did is we made sure that we had representation, and to this day, the board still makes sure it's three times as big, but make sure, no, twice as big, that there's representation from each of the schools, mm-hmm. Representation, there are advisors from the school board and the school district. It's a very inclusive process because everybody has to be on the same page.
If it wasn't a PTA president, it would have been either a former PTA president or it would have been somebody that, through my experience of dealing with people in the PTAs, it would have been somebody that I would have been able to identify as a leader and really, really well respected in that school's community.
And the other thing we've always done throughout the years is we made sure that we had someone who was an accountant and someone who was, mm-hmm. Who had the skills that we needed to really make the organization work as an organization.
Because we were operating on a shoestring, too.
Still out of your kitchens at this point, or where were you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. and we knew there were certain things that we were going to need to have done, so if that person were on the board, we were pretty sure we were going to be able to get it as a pro bono service. So mm-hmm. there was some consciousness around what were the things we needed as an organization to make it go.
And then we had, for many, many, many years, the school district gave us an office. It was a little 8x8
closet
that had no window.
In the middle school.
In the middle school, in the counselor's wing. Mm-hmm. And we had two desks. We only needed one phone. Because
we were sitting about 3.5 feet away from each other.
Not as
even
you are
that
now.
Far.
Yeah.
And we would answer, just one phone because we would both answer it. And we could answer it from whatever desk the phone was sitting on.
It's not an exaggeration. Yeah. It was 8x8 and it did have no windows. And we were in that room for 5 years.
For 5 years.
I have PTSD about that now. I have to be near a window.
After that.
Oh, yeah.
When did the name change to Kiddo, and whose idea was that? And why would you change the name?
Well, the name changed, actually, from our CPA at the time, who was our treasurer, who said, I can never remember the name. Is it Mill Valley Schools Community Foundation? Is it Mill Valley Community Schools Foundation? It's just a mouthful. Mm-hmm. It's too much. And so he says, and I have a friend who names companies, who happened to be a parent in the district. And so he brought in Danny,
Craig Frazier and Danny
Altman. I was trying to say Abel. It was Peter Abel who was the treasurer. Mm-hmm. Anyway, who brought in, and Craig was a designer, mm-hmm. and Danny was 100 Monkeys, who mm-hmm. still has a company in town. And
Craig Fraser is now a children's book illustrator and design. Right.
And this was in 19, probably 90.
It was right before I retired.
Right, so probably 1993, 94. Anyway, somewhere around mm-hmm. in there. And so they came up with, they actually had four names to choose from.
And do you remember what those four names
were? I only remember two of them.
Wow, I don't remember.
Yeah, and one was... Anyway, Kiddo was the one that we selected, mm-hmm. and it has served us well ever since. It's something people remember. It's friendly. It has to do with kids. And since then, all the other schools foundations in Marin County have come up with their own Kiddo, mm-hmm.
And
so
describe
to speak.
Your logo. Like, how did... Because it's...
Craig was the one who designed our logo.
So for the recording, describe your logo. So that...
Oh. Well, the other thing that I want to say about mm-hmm. the logo is Craig is an incredibly creative artist, designer. He was a graphic artist for many years. And when I was talking to him not too long ago, he said one of the things that he's most proud of that he has done is the Kiddo logo.
Oh,
because
my gosh.
It has had such lasting impact. Mm. So the Kiddo logo is the word Kiddo, capital K, but over the I, instead of just a dot, is an exclamation point. So we've been able to take the word Kiddo with the exclamation, or as recognition has grown, just the exclamation point, which mm-hmm. says to people in our community, this is Kiddo, this is making an impact. This is important.
And tell me about the business program, because you talked about how the Rotarians mm-hmm. got involved right at the beginning. So you were thinking about how to involve the parents in your community, but it sounds like you were also initially thinking about how to involve
Bob Canepa was in, he was one of those original Rotarians.
Mm-hmm.
And we could see that the Mill Valley Market was going to be in a very identifiable family and a leader in the business community. And so was Bob on that original? He wasn't on the original board, was he?
No.
He started
the business program when he joined the board. We finally talked him into it.
And he created the business program. He came to us with an idea, and he said, if you want the businesses to participate, I've forgotten what he said. It was something like, what you don't understand is that seven times a day, somebody walks through the door of every business and says, give me something free, so they can use it for an auction or whatever it is that they're using. And we know, as business owners, that those people do not shop in our stores. So if you want the businesses to really participate in a big way, you have to create a cyclical program that's going to reward the businesses for rewarding the work that you're doing with the schools. You need to create a partnership mm-hmm. with the businesses. You can't just go in the door and ask them for something without recognizing what it is that you have to offer them. And, you know, in all naivete, we said, what is that exactly that we have to offer them? And Bob said to us, you have the single largest shopping block in Mill Valley. With the parents and families in your community, that is the single largest shopping block in town. So if you have influence with those people, now the businesses will listen and say, we can do a partnership here. Yes, we care about the kids. But as Bob said to us, they have to care about the kids and what you're doing more than five other things that are coming in the door that are also important. So he actually came to us and he created that initial that initial program.
And what was the name of the program?
It originally was an It was called Helping Hand. It was an adopt a school, adopt a classroom program. It was taken from some of the larger programs where, for example, the Navy adopts the high school in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And he said, how do we take that concept and bring it down to a small community level. And that's when we came up with the, adopting, we now call it sponsoring a classroom, a school, the district, and such.
And it was called, in case it didn't get on the tape, it was called Helping Hands.
Yeah.
And how did Bob start talking to the businesses? Did he present at Rotary or did he go door to door?
I'm sure he presented at Rotary. Bob is
persuasive.
Really persuasive. He's a good networker. He's a good fundraiser. He's just,
just
good
like
person.
Just like we were looking who were the leaders in the schools' communities to be involved in what we were doing, Bob brought to the table, yeah, here are the business leaders that right. you need to have involved here. You need, and
so he had like Earl Johnson, the orthodontist. Well, pretty soon then we had Cleve Johnson, and we had Marshall Rothstein, and we had all of the orthodontists mm-hmm. supporting the schools. And it just, it grew from a small program. The first, we were really concerned that we wouldn't have enough sponsors to sponsor all of the classroom. School district was much smaller mm-hmm. at that point in time. And now there are 3 and 4 sponsors per classroom. Mm-hmm.
It was really lovely. Yeah. Because I'm not in the middle of Kiddo now, I don't know if they still do it, but it was really lovely in the beginning. The classrooms would go on field trips to the businesses that had sponsored them. And the businesses really felt a wonderful ownership yeah. of the kids that had come in. The kids then said, oh, we went on a field trip to the Mill Valley Record and we saw how the printing presses work. And they would go home and talk to their families yeah. about it. And then the families would get, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It really was wonderful.
And when we used to have Lila's Chocolates, mm-hmm. Lila used to be a teacher. And so she would always make up a math lesson for every classroom that she sponsored, and the kids would figure out, well, how much chocolate they needed, and figuring out, oh, well, we have to pay for packaging, and then we have to pay for shipping, mm-hmm. and, how you make a profit, and where, all of these kinds of things, which were...
It was terrific. The kids would go into a store and think, oh, she must be making a bazillion dollars, because look at these, chocolate costs this much money. So it really, it was an education for the kids, too.
Yeah,
it was such a lovely yeah. thing to watch how it worked. It was very exciting for us.
Yeah.
And then it kind of started to grow really on its own energy, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then we created a business committee.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, you couldn't, at first Bob was really doing yeah. a lot of that soliciting of businesses to participate, and then it just got too big and we needed more help, and we started bringing people on board specifically to work on the Helping Hands program, mm-hmm. so that now that started to have its own energy too.
Yeah.
So I have another question. Mm-hmm. So you began this endeavor before there were computers. So how describe what it was like.
We had computers. We had one. Remember,
Radio Shack.
I had one Radio Shack computer at home, mm-hmm. and I used to do the bookkeeping on the Radio Shack mm-hmm. computer and whatever. But there weren't any in the schools.
That computer was driven by MS-DOS. I don't know if people who are listening to this are going to know what that means. But when we wanted to do selections for mm-hmm. our emerging database, mm-hmm. you had to create a string. So it would be when A is greater than B, mm-hmm. and B is 3 times C and minus F with little dots and things, and the string would be just enormous, these enormous strings. Don't talk to me, I'm creating a query. And then you'd get to the end and
it would work.
It either would or it wouldn't. And then, we'd go back and we'd go, oh, God, okay, there's got to be a period in the wrong place somewhere here. It was really, really archaic and yeah. very frustrating and very, very slow. And then Henry Corning came to us.
Yeah.
And who was he?
Henry. How did Henry get on to us?
I don't remember. I think he had children at Old Mill.
I can't. Yeah. I think that might
yeah.
be right.
Yeah.
Henry came to us, and he said, "You can't operate a business like this." And he said, "I'm going to get you 2 computers, maybe and a printer."
Yeah.
I mean, what you really have to get to is When we first started, we didn't have a telephone. We didn't have anything. We went to Citibank, and they gave us one of their old phones. I mean, that's where we got. It was really pathetic.
Everything was donated.
Everything. So we, you know, it was like, does anybody have a typewriter that they could give us? And here's an old phone. And then we had this MS-DOS Radio Shack computer that was...
It was our old computer.
It was really something. And then when Henry came in and he said, I'm going to buy you two brand new computers and a printer, we were kind of hysterical. And it would.
And then every 5 years, he'd upgrade.
It was really... So wonderful surprises and things like that would happen for us. It was fantastic.
Part of what has been so wonderful over the years, to me, are all the people that we've worked with. Mm-hmm. And we've had just amazing people who have served as board members over the years, just who have helped in so many ways. Seems like a lot of times Penny and I would get the credit, but it was like all of the support of the board, of the community, of people who were willing to donate, people who were willing to, you know, roll up their sleeves and, you know, stuff letters and lick envelopes and get out mailings and, you know.
Our kids still remember. I mean, my kids, I'm sure yours too. Trish and I would bring the mailings home, and our families would stuff. They would stuff all of the envelopes. Do you remember when we did our first big printing down the peninsula? Because we found a printer that was less expensive, and we didn't want to pay for shipping. And I still remember I drove it down there.
It was over in the east. It was Fremont,
and I slept in my car while they were doing the printing for hours. It's like I sat in my car and waited.
Was so heavy.
And then we packed up all the stuff in the car, and we did that for several years. Yeah. And I still remember the time when I called you and I said it's one of the boards was wrong and they printed the whole thing upside down.
Yeah. Oh my God!
I was hysterical. And my first reaction was, okay, we can take it apart and we can re-glue it and still send it out. No, we were really watching every. Yeah. I think it was going to cost $100 to have stuff shipped up, and we said, oh, no, we can't spend $100. We'll just drive down there and sit in the car and wait.
And how long were you in that 8x8 classroom? When were the offices?
It wasn't a classroom. It was a closet.
It was a closet.
So when did you move from the closet?
5 years. We were in there 5 years.
Yeah. We moved at the time, the district was very small. I think when we started, the district was maybe 1,400.
Didn't I have one of my first dogs, and we had the crate in the office, too? And then you had Lindsay in the stroller.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, when after the first parcel tax.
So you said when you started, there were 1,400 students in the school district.
I think so. Okay. Somewhere around 1,500, right. Something like that.
And I'll say for the record, it's over 3,300 students now.
The first parcel tax had a classroom upstairs with lots of windows in it, a big classroom in the middle school. And so after the parcel tax was over, Penny and I said, well, gee, nobody's going to be using that room. Maybe we should ask for it. So we did. So here we had a big classroom. And where were our two desks? Right next to each other, right in front of the windows.
It was an enormous space. I mean, it was really enormous, and we could have been, we were still probably 5 feet apart, instead of 3.5 feet, but we were both planted right in front of the windows.
Now, I know you started an unusual fundraising opportunity when you created a consignment store, is that correct?
Right.
Tell me about that. What was that?
That was the second banana. What we were looking for at the time is... We had donated income, we thought, and, you know, with donated income, so I remember one of the analogies that we used to use was, okay, every year we have a bucket, we fill it up with donations, we dump it out into programs, and then we have to start all over again with an empty bucket. And wouldn't it be great if we had some sort of just a base ongoing income. So we went to some kind of a workshop on starting a business, And we actually looked into, it was five, we researched five different businesses for something for a source of ongoing, you know, ongoing income that we didn't have to rely on straight donations
for. And one of the things was that it needed to be a related business.
Yeah.
That we learned in the workshop. It needed to be related to what it is that your nonprofit
right.
is doing.
We looked in daycare, which was a need. We looked at a miniature golf over where Edna McGuire is, because that was a closed school mm-hmm. at that point. And then the consignment store. And good thing we ended up with the consignment store, because the other two, they reopened the school. Child care has all sorts of, I mean, we couldn't figure out how to
We couldn't get past the liability issues
yeah,
on child on care was going to be too big.
So we had the children's consignment store. And again,
when did that open? What year was that?
That would have been 1980.
No,
it was probably about 4 or 5 years after we started, so maybe 85, 86. Mm-hmm. I can look in this little, my little book here, and it probably will have it. But the thing was, the middle school, again, had extra space. Mm. So we were able to get a classroom. Now, upstairs was not ideal when you're talking about shopping. Middle school is not ideal. It is not a location with other retail where people are kind of walking by, but it was free. The Lions Club, which we had Lions Club in Mill Valley at that time, they loved to do projects. So we found a designer to donate the design for the store, and they built it all out for us as a donation. And it was in the middle school for many years until the middle school started growing, and then they needed the space back. Then we had to move. We found a discounted rent over in the Strawberry side, and were able to keep it open until that property was being sold, and we decided it just wasn't worth moving it again. But it was a great run while it was. Well, it was there. It was fun.
And so when did the middle school move you out of the upstairs classroom into, or did you move to the current space?
Again, when the middle school was growing, they needed the space for classrooms. They moved us down, used to be the IMC, the Instructional mm-hmm. Materials Center. It used to be downstairs, and we had a little space carved out of that. And then as the district grew, then the IMC moved over to Edna when that was opened.
And the current office, when did you move into that space?
It was after I left.
Yeah.
We were still upstairs when I was there.
Yeah.
So, Penny, when did you leave? When did you retire?
1996.
Yeah.
1996.
So that was 15 years.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And at that point, if you can recall, how much money was Kiddo raising at that point?
Mm. Oh, maybe $100,000. Because I can remember when Trish and I said, if we could ever raise $100,000, it would be like a miracle. It would be like a miracle. Now, the really giant quantifiable amounts of money happened after I left. Trisha, mm-hmm. Trisha spearheaded. Marshaled that through.
Well, there were,
you know, it was a lot.
It's all built out of need, and it's all built out of, you know, it was in the early days we were able to save and maintain these programs with small amounts of money. It was a smaller district. It was, and then as the district grew, as the cuts continued from the state of California, the needs were greater, and the school population grew. We needed to raise additional funds to keep the schools whole.
And in looking back, both of you, over what it was at the beginning to what it is now, so this year, 2014, the goal for Kiddo is $3.1 million to fund programs for about 3,300 students. Yeah. So your idea that began over coffee and tea in 1981 has morphed into something that is indispensable for our school district. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, for myself, when I left Kiddo, I went to two other, I didn't leave Kiddo to go to these other projects, but the other projects happened, which were also wonderful. They were also community-based projects. They were very rewarding for me. But Kiddo, the work we did at Kiddo will always be, for me, the thing that I'm absolutely the proudest of. I remember when Trisha and I first started in her little anteroom kind of thing at her house, and we said, you know what, if it doesn't work, we'll have made a lot of friends and we'll know a lot of people after it's done. We honestly did say that, and I can say to this moment that my best friends have been the people that I met through Kiddo. Yeah. Their friendships that have gone on for 35 years. It was a work that was a work that came out of passion. It wasn't just a job for us.
Yeah. It really wasn't it a really, job. It was a passion.
It was something we both cared so deeply and integrally about, and we both still do. It's who we are. And it's an enormous privilege to be able to have done your life's work out of a passion instead of just having to go to work. Mm-hmm. And you make relationships and you make a difference in your community. For me, it's just been a blessing of my life. It really has been.
And it's also, I mean, people often used to ask me, because I stayed on for another 15, 16, 17 years, I don't know, after Penny retired, and they'd ask, well, your kids are grown. Why are you still interested in doing this? And, you know, all I had to do is go to a music performance, a music class, a dance performance, watch the kids in the play, go into an art room, and see the joy that these programs bring the kids, they have for over 30 years. And to be able to look at that and say, you know, we had a small part in making this possible, enriching the lives of all of these children. Who knows? And, you know, we often think about, well, I wonder what, because they studied, you know, music, you know, how did that change the course of their lives, mm-hmm. or art, or all of these things have and we have parents who come back and talk to, now we have the kids that are grown and have kids of their mm-hmm. own that also come back and say, oh, I remember the Kiddo programs, and I remember this, and
on a very, very personal basis, my younger son, Gabriel, who participated in plays and things that were made possible, went on to major in theater at Northwestern University. Mm-hmm. So we saw the nurturing in him, in the theater arts. Both of my sons are very involved in music, and that was something that was nurtured in them when they were very young. Yeah. So on a personal basis, one is now 43 and the other is 37, I can see how having that as an integral part of their lives made a difference, and then you can multiply that times thousands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how has Mill Valley changed since you started this? Like, you can be very candid about that. What changes have you noticed in our town?
Oh, there's a long silence there. There have been a lot of changes mm-hmm. since we started, a lot. And I would have to say that part of the reason, probably a significant part of the reason why I left when I left, was that there was, I remember saying to Trisha, if I have to tell one more person why this is important, if I have to explain this one more time, why this matters in a very personal way for these children, I think I'm going to lose it. It's like, I don't understand why we are still having to explain this. And it seems to me that it's getting harder to explain to the new
group that were coming up, there was more of a sense of, well, of course this is here and it's part of what we're supposed to be having. And we would have to explain, actually, this is here because we're making a very big commitment for this to happen. So I think we've seen a big change. Now, it's not fair because I've been out of the school district for a long time. But for me, at the time when I left, there was just a different sense of what people were due instead of the passion of taking an ownership for the change that was needing to happen. The town itself has changed enormously since we moved here. Downtown used to be a resident-serving community.
There was Lockwood's Pharmacy.
There was a children's shoe store.
Hardware.
There were pharmacies and hardware stores and markets and
general store where you could buy thread and material.
I mean, you really could go downtown and take care of all your business. Yeah. And that was very integral for us in nurturing that whole sense of community. We had community businesses. Mm-hmm. We had community schools. We had community businesses. Things weren't compartmentalized. I think, I don't know if they're compartmentalized now. I know downtown is not resident serving anymore. Mm-hmm. And that changes. That changes the complexion of what it feels like when you're downtown. Do they still do the Halloween parade through downtown?
Yeah.
That's Halloween parade? No.
Oh,
no,
so
the
cute.
Kids. Oh, the at old from Old
yeah,
School.
The kids. Yeah.
So
the kids.
Cute.
They go marching.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And
so
all
cute.
The schools have their
Tricia, what do you
Halloween.
Think in terms of how things have changed?
Well, I think it's hard. It's still an incredibly wonderful town filled with incredibly wonderful people. When you live here a long time, you know, you think back to the neighborhood when we were first, when I first moved in. You'd been there a couple of years, and we had the Alto firemen down the street, and we mm-hmm. had somebody who worked at, you know, a lot of teachers lived mm-hmm. kind of in the neighborhood, and you had the person who worked at General Hardware, and you had mm-hmm.
In your neighborhood.
You know, everybody in the neighborhood, and those people have, by and large, all moved away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are a few of us still there. But the other lovely thing is that now in our neighborhood, there were years when we never had a trick-or-treater, whatever. We still don't have too many because there are too many stairs and it's on a hill.
And you're up in the hill.
But
yep.
there were no children in the neighborhood. And now the
children
are
coming back
in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of the, you know, the cycle where now there's a young community again.
You know, when I don't want to sound too negative in terms of what the community is like, when you look at the level of participation that's happening yeah. with Kiddo, it's enormous. And yeah. that's not coming from people who don't have any sense that this is important.
Yeah.
I don't know what the percentages now are of participation. I think it was about 50% when I left.
Now it's up to, with lots of challenges and lots of work, it's up to 75%.
Mm-hmm. yeah. So that, you know,
yeah.
people are seeing that things yeah. are important. The bar is higher.
Yeah.
So I don't want to sound too negative about it. There, when I left, I was feeling a little bit negative. But there it is. I mean, I think it's magnificent. It's a community that really, I think Mill Valley is unusual as a community that over and over and over again, they pass parcel taxes over and over and over again. They vote to support the schools, to maintain their streets, to take care of. We always used to say when we first started too, Mill Valley has never considered itself a wide place on the highway. It's never been that. It's always been a place that considers the people here consider themselves to be from Mill Valley, not from Marin County or not from a suburb of San Francisco. They identify themselves, and I think that's unusual in a non-urban kind of a community. And that, I don't know that we ever could have gotten
off the ground or continue to mm-hmm. exist without that sense of community.
Yeah.
So there it was in the beginning name.
Right.
And it's been...
And it was there, it was very intentional.
It was intentional. But you couldn't do it if it wasn't a place that, mm-hmm. that acknowledged community. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, I get up in the morning and I go to the city and that's my job and I go home and go to sleep. People care. Mm-hmm. They cared then and they care now. So it's a special place.
And Penny, what are you doing now? Like what?
I'm retired now. After I left Kiddo, I helped the library with their fundraising for their renovation, the reconstruction here. I did that for the better part of 96. And in 97, I was hired by the city to do the fundraising for the Mill Valley Community Center. And I did that for 5 years until the center was built. And then I was off for, I thought I was retired, for another.
Penny has retired many times.
I've retired three times. and I thought I was done. I was off work for, I think, 2.5 years. And then Barbara Solomon at the Redwoods mm-hmm. came to me and asked me if I would create a development. They didn't have a development department at the time. And I worked there for 5 years. So I left there in 2010, and I've been not working since then.
Officially retired.
Officially not working. Officially not working now.
And Tricia, what about you? Tell us, when did you retire from Kiddo? And how did things change when Penny was gone?
Well, it was pretty scary at first. Because we were kind of tied at the hip. And it was, you know, when we talked about being in, you know, in the very beginning where her knowledge of the schools and my knowledge of fundraising, and we just put that all together. And we really, you know, worked together on everything. So it was a little scary when Penny retired, and, you know, but it was, the work was too important not to just, you know, push on. And I had a wonderful board of directors, and, you know, eventually over time we brought in additional people, and it just... by that point in time, it was firmly established. It had a momentum and just able to kind of move it forward. I retired, was it a year and a half, and just thrilled with the new executive director and do whatever I can to support, bring the history back to the organization. I continue to sit on the endowment committee. That's something that we started many years ago, and it's, again, kind of that dream that if the endowment grew to a point, it could fund arts programs in perpetuity. One of the things, the endowment was kind of a general endowment for many years, and when I retired, the board officially changed the name to the Kiddo Endowment for the Arts, kind of in honor of the early years mm-hmm. and what we had accomplished. And at that point, then, we can focus on having these programs funded in perpetuity through the endowment, which would be wonderful. Since then, too, I have been working as the board president for an organization called Schools Rule, Marin, which is a consortium of all of the schools foundations in Marin County, built a little bit on the principle of why Kiddo started, in that looking to provide equity in programming throughout the county.
And I think it's just a beautiful kind of circle of things. I mean, Tricia and I still live next door to each other, and now we found our way back into my kitchen. We're painting together on Thursday afternoons. We have time now, so we're doing watercolor painting together. We both take Italian. We both are really passionate about going to Italy every year. So, you know, what started in the kitchen is back in the kitchen, which is
just a nice thing. It's nice for us to have time to be together again.
Mm-hmm. It's an incredible story of your friendship, but to build something that you have that will go on for many more years is incredible.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, you know, is when Penny retired, she said, you know, it's easier for me to retire because I know that I'm leaving it in good hands. Mm-hmm. And then I know you'll take care of it, you'll nurture it, you'll whatever. And so it's really, you know, it feels good to me that now that I've retired, I also know I've left it in good hands with a wonderful kiddo staff, a wonderful dedicated kiddo board, and I know that it will continue on. And so that makes me very happy.
And what do you think your kids think about all you did? Because they grew up with two moms very involved in their schools and in kiddo. What do you think they would say?
Both my kids, I know, are very proud now. I think at the time it was like, do I really have to stick on more labels? Or, Mom, how come you're late to pick me up because I was on the phone trying to raise funds for the schools?
I can remember Gabe saying to me once, is it not possible to go through Red Cart Market without having you talk to every single person who's in the market? No, I know the kids are very proud of the work that we've done. Joyce Kleiner just came out with a book of legends of Mill Valley, and Tricia and I are in there. And I have three grandchildren, and it's just a joy to me. The kids look in the book and they say, oh my, Grandma, it's you. So it's, I have a lot of pride in it, and my family has a lot of pride in the work that we did. I don't know what you can hope for in a lifetime that's better than doing something that you feel really good about, sharing with people,
and making a difference in people's lives. I know
our families are very proud of us. Yeah. And
although Jim did call himself the kiddo widow for many years. The one thing I do not miss are all of the late night meetings and being out several nights a week. So, mm-hmm.
And any final thoughts, either things you want to say to each other or things that if your grandchildren are listening to this, what things do you want to say before we conclude our interview?
I know I've said this to Tricia when in her retirement, but we really went on a life journey, and we went on a life journey together, and I couldn't have asked for a better partner to do this with. It made an enormous difference in my life.
And it was, you know, I think part of this is, you know, as you're a little bit older, you're thinking, oh, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to do that? With the two of us, of course we can. You know, there were people throwing roadblocks in our way all along the way, and we'd just say, well, we're just not going to settle for that. We need to do this. And
I think we really empowered each other.
I think we did. We really, you know, it was like things that I wasn't too sure about, then Penny would say, well, of course I could do that, or something she wasn't too sure, well, I can do that. You know, we really, really worked together. And I don't think either one of us could have done it on our own.
I don't think so.
I think it was that synergy and that partnership that really gave us the perseverance, and it did take a lot of perseverance in those early years to make this organization a reality.
Well, thank you on behalf of the Mill Valley Historical Society, on behalf of the Mill Valley Public Library. I just wanted to thank you both for your incredible contributions to our town, but even more so to all of the generations of children that have just grown tremendously from that seed idea at a kitchen table that has grown into this sustaining organization. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.